Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm playing an interview I did with actor Patrick Noonan, who is starring in a production of Spamalot at Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida. In addition to playing Patrick's interview, I am playing a number of songs from the show Spamalot, which in and of themselves, even if you don't see the show, which you should do because it's amazing, the songs themselves are hilarious. And also, I'm playing my holiday story. I play it every year at this time. It is something remarkable that happened to me, and I like to share around the holidays because it happened around the holidays. Okay, so hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down you dive, where the child's gone to survive, finding wisdom's other words. Oh, you really can. From nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources, oh,
England, 932 AD, a kingdom divided. To the west, the Anglo-Saxons, to the east, the French, above, nothing but Celts and some people from Scotland. In Gwynedd, Powys and Dyfed, plague. In the kingdoms of Wessex, Sussex, Essex and Kent, plague. In Mercia and the two Anglias, plague, with a 50% chance of pestilence and famine coming out of the northeast at 12 miles per hour. Legend tells us of an extraordinary leader who arose from the chaos to unite a troubled kingdom. A man with a vision who gathered knights together in a holy quest. This man was Arthur, King of the Britons. For this was England!
Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. This is actually The Lynn Show, not England. What you are listening to is the opening of the glorious, hilarious musical Spamalot, which is currently running at Florida Studio Theater in Sarasota, Florida. And the interview I'm playing today is with the man who plays Arthur in Spamalot. And I'm going to play a number of other songs from the show. So as I said in the run-up, if you don't see the show, the songs themselves are very, very funny. Anyway, The Lynn Show is about being who you really are, not who you are pretending to be. And as a therapist, what I see over and over and over again is people who are pretending. They don't even know they're pretending. They believe that what they are demonstrating, what they are showing to the world, what they believe about themselves is all there is. But in fact, inevitably, there is more. And the challenge of therapy, and I think actually the challenge of living, the challenge of growing up, of living the life that was mostly meant for you, that fits you, that is, to use the therapeutic word, congruent. You know, that old saying, you know, what you see is what you get. No, what you see is what you got. Well, most of us are showing less than we got. And so the Lynn Show is about making this point, that it is possible that you are showing less than you got, less than you are. I talk about this every week. I will continue to talk about it every week because as clear as it is to me, I know that it is not clear to everybody. It is not understood, really. And it is easily forgettable. And the reason for that is that for so many of us in our childhood, some quality about us was unacceptable, or at least not desirable. As I mention every time I get a chance, this could be some talent. We love to dance. Just put that music on and what? Just move. Or sing. Or draw. I have had a client once who was compelled to draw on the walls. Well, you can imagine that didn't go down that well in her family. Or maybe it isn't a talent or a skill at all. It's just a way of being. Perhaps we have a really funny sense of humor. Lots of things strike us as amusing, and we laugh. We laugh, we have a big laugh. Maybe we were teased about that laugh. Maybe a parent told us that wasn't ladylike, or it was annoying. So what can happen to somebody who is told, often enough, that their spontaneous humor is in some way ugly, and that it brings criticism or teasing or sometimes something worse? What can happen? Well, I mean, it's not rocket science. Such a person will begin to believe, and finally believe, that their humor, their spontaneity, the noise they make, is somehow ugly and is going to cost them in terms of affection, of love, is going to bring them an attention they don't want. And so they begin first with struggle to suppress it, and then they get really good at it, and over time, they don't laugh. This can happen also, and maybe even more often, to sadness. Don't cry. You want to cry? Go to your room. What is that face? What is that face? What is that? We want children who are happy here, who smile. Don't make that face. I had a client once who, whenever he felt sad or scared, actually, he would make a joke. That was how he learned to compensate, to what, get rid of those pesky feelings of sadness or fear, because they brought a response from his family that was really unattractive. Well, unattractive, that's a euphemism for dangerous. So that he would make these jokes and laugh, and everybody else would laugh. He became known, actually, as a pretty funny guy. The irony was that when he realized that that was what he was doing, that he was covering his sadness, covering his fear, and that actually that was costing him, he determined not to do it. And in the process of being able to accept his fear and his sadness, he had a very interesting response. He had the sensation of sadness. He determined not to tell a joke, but his body laughed anyway. The body, so trained to respond to fear or sadness with laughter, gave the response, even though it was completely inappropriate, it wasn't called for, and he didn't tell a joke. But the point of this is that our body learns to hide these things that didn't work in our childhood. Our body hides it for us by dropping the appropriate chemical. In this case, it dropped the chemical that made him laugh into his bloodstream. And so his body did that, even though there was no joke. So this is why it is difficult to recapture, to rediscover, to get access to those things which we have hidden. So the Lynn Show is about making this point, saying there may have been something which you needed to hide, not only from your family of origin, not only in school. My God, school is such a powerful controller of behavior. Or your culture. I had a client once who was raised in a culture that really didn't like singing or dancing or music. And so she became anxious, uncomfortable in the presence of other people enjoying singing, dancing, music. Religion. I had a client once who was told that joy was somehow the devil's something, and so she was reluctant to experience joy. So okay, you learn this. Some powerful influence on you tells you that something about you is not good. And you begin to hide it, and eventually you figure out, well, you don't figure out, but your body and your psyche figures out how to hide it, and then it hides it from you, and then your body creates the reflex that keeps this undercover. That's the word I use for it in the book I wrote about this. I wrote a book called When You Can, You Will. Why you can't always do what you want to do and what to do about it. And in that book, I say that we hide these qualities, our body and our psyche, hide these qualities undercover, leaving us with a cover story. That's what's left, which we decided was somehow acceptable or at least not dangerous. The good news, all that stuff is undercover. It hasn't gone away. We can't amputate it. We didn't lose it. The bad news, our body has already learned to keep it locked undercover. And so there will be a response, a reaction, a flashback, if you will, when we attempt to recover it. But again, the good news, recovery is possible. And of course, one of the ways to recover that which you have had to hide is through psychotherapy, which is what I do for a living. So if you're thinking, well, maybe there was something about me that I felt I needed to hide, and maybe I'd like to try and either figure that out, or I even know what it is, I'd like to try and get it back, and you'd like to talk to me about it, please go up on my website, thelynshow.com. thelynshow. Click on the email tab and say, I'd like to talk to you. as I do all of my psychotherapy work these days on the telephone. And there's an article on the website called Psychotherapy on the Go, which talks about having therapy on the telephone. You can read the article or you can ask me questions about it. Or if you have a group or organization and you'd like me to come and talk about this at your group or organization, please let me know. So on the website, in addition to all this information, you can listen to all of my past shows. You can listen to the one I'm going to play today, or the one I am actually speaking today. You can listen to all the interviews that I did. Interviews. I do interviews because I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. And when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like to be congruent, to be who you really are. That's unfortunately because in our culture, it is so difficult to give a life to an art. We make it so difficult that the people who do it because it is who they really are. And at least in the area of their work, they are themselves. And today's interview is no exception. This is Patrick Noonan. In fact, Patrick's story is a little unusual. The way he was alerted to who he really is unusual. And I'm going to let Patrick tell it because it's his story. So again, I'm going to play several more songs from Spamalot, which if you are living in or near Sarasota, Florida, or you are coming to visit, you really, if there is still, oh, it's been extended, actually. So take this opportunity to give yourself a treat in the holiday season. In addition to Patrick's interview and songs from Spamalot, I'm going to play my holiday story. I play it every year at this time. It's my miracle story, and it happened to me during the holidays. But now, here's another song from Spamalot. This is a cheery, keep your chin up kind of song. And then my interview with Patrick Noonan.
This is a total bloody disaster. All my knights have fled, and we're lost in a dark and very expensive forest.
Well, it could be worse.
Well, how could it possibly be worse?
Oh, cheer up, sire. You know what they say.
What do they say, Patsy?
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life. You give it a try. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten. And that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps. Just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life. For life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your sin, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
Always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath. Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true.
You'll see it's all a show. Keep on laughing as you go.
Just remember that the last laugh is on you.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side.
life is quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow.
Excuse me, is that a shrubbery?
Oh, yes, I'm throwing it out. The cat won't leave it alone.
Well, what a stroke of luck. I'll take it off your hands. Pay the lady, Patsy.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the bright side of life. Side of life. Side of life.
Okay, I am here with Patrick Noonan in a rehearsal space at Florida Studio Theater. And I am here with him because he is King Arthur in the production of Spamalot. Before we talk about the show, I interview people who make their living or their life with an art.
Okay.
And I make the leap to assume that you do that.
I do, yeah. I'm very lucky enough to do that.
As an actor.
As an actor, yeah.
Yes, very nice. And I only ask one question.
Sure.
And that is, do you remember, can you tell me, the very first moment in your life when it occurred to you that acting, performing, having people look at you, telling stories, any of that occurred?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. There is an aha moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I was 16 and I was doing West Side Story.
Whoa, 16.
16 years old.
It must have started before then, otherwise you wouldn't be in West Side Story.
No, I mean, I had the bug before then, but to be specific about when I wanted to do this for a living.
Okay, but I'm not talking about that.
Oh, I thought you were talking about
No, and I want to get to that for sure. But when did the bug start?
Well, my brother and my sister, older brother and older sister, started to get into theater in high school, and all their friends were kind of my friends because we were pretty much close in age. Mm-hmm. And I just sort of followed suit. And
well, wait a minute. Does that mean that they rehearsed at home? That that you watched them? That you went to see them?
Yeah, I got to see them. I got to watch them. They never rehearsed at home, but they always talked about how fun it was. And
How old were you about?
I would think 12, 13.
When they started doing this.
When they started doing this.
Right. And do you know why they started doing this? I mean, is this in your family?
It's not in our family. My father was a cop. My mother was a secretary. But all three of us kids ended up in the arts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, that is unusual.
It is.
This is very unusual.
It is.
So do you have any idea how this happened?
I don't, nor do my parents. They don't know where that bug came from, but all three of us kids got it.
Did you go to the movies? Did they take you to the theater? Did you, any of it?
Not really take us to the theater, no more than any other parents would, but like I said, I just followed suit with my brother and my sister. And
that's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. And not only are you an actor, but you must be a singer.
I am. This is my first professional musical.
Wow.
Yeah. The last musical I did was 23 years ago in a community theater.
Okay, all right. So you get the bug. You mm-hmm. want your baby brother, and you want to be like big brother and sister.
Exactly.
And so is there a drama club in school, or are there shows? I guess there must be.
Yeah, there was a fall play and a spring musical.
Yes.
And I just fell in love with it.
Did you audition?
Mm-hmm. I auditioned. The first audition, actually, I was in sixth grade, it was for Oliver, and I didn't get it, and I was heartbroken, and I swore that I would never try to do that again.
Really?
Yeah, until, of course, the next year when when I auditioned and I got in, and that was my first first play or musical, first
performance.
What was
it? You remember?
The Music Man. Music Man.
Really?
Yeah. I played a River City Kid. I was just in the chorus.
Yeah.
But man, it was fun.
Yeah. A lot of fun. And were your siblings encouraging? I mean, did they say?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were all really friendly and supportive of each other, and all of our friends just hung out with my brother and my sister. And you were all in the arts.
You were all potential actors, dancers, singers, things like that.
Yep, we were all high school triple threats.
Really?
Well, as far as high school kids
go, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, so
So, 16, you're mm-hmm. still in school.
Yeah.
And you're doing...
Doing West Side Story.
West Side Story.
I was playing Riff in West Side Story.
Oh, move it up.
Move it up. I was a star in high school.
Yeah, you were. No. Yeah, well.
Well, yeah, among that little group in high school, yeah. But, and my gym, I was mowing the lawn, when I was 16, because that was my job every week. And for some reason, my gym teacher came up to me while I was mowing the lawn, and he said, "Patrick, I just want to let you know you did a really good job in West Side Story. And I just want to say congratulations, Patrick, because you found your niche in life." And, like,
holy
a lot of people
cow.
Don't do that. And I never heard the word niche before. No, I was only 16, but I knew what he meant. I'm like, really? I mean, I found my niche in life? And I really got to thinking. I'm like, maybe I do want to do this. Because I really didn't find any love. That was the only love I found in life at the age of 16.
Wait a minute. This is so amazing. This guy who's the gym teacher.
Who's a gym teacher. And what is he doing in my neighborhood? I found out that my neighbor, my neighbor's older son, his fiance was the daughter of the gym teacher. Really weird connection
yes.
there. But he was never on my street before. And he just comes walking up to me when I'm, you know, mowing my lawn. It was really, really
and
odd.
And he had seen you.
Yeah, he saw me in West Side Story, I guess, the previous night. And he wanted to encourage me. Well, he did. He really encouraged me.
He changed your life.
He did, yeah.
That's amazing. And, of course, it does point out the impact that people can have when they have no idea.
Right.
You know?
Isn't that true?
Yeah. I mean, he from the way you describe it, it sounds like he thought you'd already made this choice. And he was just saying, good for you, congratulations
exactly.
for having made this choice.
Exactly.
When actually you hadn't.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And years later, I'll just fast forward, years later, this is about 2010, I wrote to that neighbor of mine and... because I wanted to just thank thank the gym teacher.
Yeah.
His name was Mr. Bergner, and I just wanted to see if he was still around and if I could thank him. And I wrote this really long letter to her. And unfortunately, he passed away about 4 or 5 years prior. But that story, that letter, got around to his son, and his son contacted me and said how great that was to read that letter. And he wished he would have known that, but he said, out of all the stories that were told at his funeral, he said, "I wish that one were told, because that it really hit him hard." I'm so glad.
Yes, yeah. I have tears.
Yeah. I'm so glad it all came full circle.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so here you are. You're 16. You do this, and this guy, sort of, I don't know, Deus Ex Machina, right? Shows up and says, "You should
yeah.
do this, right?"
Yeah.
And you say, "Well, yeah, okay, good." So now you're 16, and have your brother and sister made this choice yet, or they don't, or they did, or they didn't?
They did. My sister went on to run her own theater company, her own children's theater company, for a few years, but she...
Well, wait. I was asking a more specific question, and I didn't do it well.
Sure.
Did you think that they were interested in doing theater professionally, or had this not
yes.
come up at all? You already knew that...
I had a feeling. At that time, I knew my sister wanted to go into theater in college.
Mm-hmm.
My brother, no, not until later.
Okay.
Not until later.
So it wasn't... I mean, you had to make this choice on your own.
Yes.
Okay. So you make this choice at 16.
Yeah.
Do you tell your parents?
Yeah, my mother was really supportive. My father was not.
Ah.
Not at all. But
he said another one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But years later, once he realized that I could make a living out of it, that I had health insurance and there was a union and I was taken care of, then he was very, very supportive.
Right.
But it took a bit of convincing.
Well, I'm amazed. I mean, these are people who have no way of understanding the compulsion that makes somebody want to do this.
Yeah.
You know, so they've got nothing to, they can only see the downside, which is maybe you won't mm-hmm. be able to make a living.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, but that bug, it's a powerful feeling. It really
yeah,
is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And actually, I want to talk about that, too.
Okay.
So 16, you make this choice, you tell your parents, mm-hmm. does that mean that you want to follow in your sister's footsteps and go to college and major, or, right?
Exactly, yeah,
so,
yeah. I was a horrible student in high school.
Ah.
Horrible student, which is another reason why, I mean, theater in high school kept my sanity. It really did. It was cathartic, too. After realizing when I graduated that no college would accept me, I had to get my grades up. So I went to a community college, and I got my grades up to A's and B's, and I became a tutor the very next year. I got my grades up enough to go to Boston University, and they have a really nice...
Okay, hold on.
Yeah.
This is so interesting to me. Right. So you're a horrible student in high school.
Horrible.
But not because you don't have the capacity.
No, I hated high school.
Right.
I hated
And then
class.
The minute you have motivation,
yeah,
you can do it.
A's and B's.
Another important thing that I... point I want to make,
mm-hmm.
that, what, motivation, passion, connection.
Yeah, and fear that I would just fail in life because, you know, I was just coasting along thinking, you know, under the umbrella of a village in Greendale, Wisconsin, you know, that everything was fine. Once I graduated, I thought to myself, wow, I'm going to be in the real world. I should just start really applying myself. So,
in a way, maybe some of that comes from your parents, their seriousness about taking mm-hmm. care of yourself, about being a grown-up, about, am I wrong
sure,
about this?
Sure, no, that makes sense. I never mm-hmm. thought about that, yeah, but that makes sense. Well, they always told me that I should apply myself and really study, but I didn't do any homework, I didn't study at all. I don't know how I graduated, actually. I just coasted by.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know how I graduated.
But again, for me, it makes this point that when you really have connected to who you are and what you need to do, things that you didn't do before, maybe even couldn't do before, suddenly you can.
Suddenly appear, yeah.
Right.
Just the ability is right there.
Okay, so then you go from somebody who can't pass his classes in high school to somebody who's a tutor. I love it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, great. I became a tutor that very next semester.
Wow.
Yeah, next semester, yeah. Became a tutor.
Okay, so you do your, how many years?
Two. Well, you know, 1 year in community college, and the next year I moved up to, I got my grades up, and I went to University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, mm-hmm. And I was sort of, I guess, a liberal arts major, maybe. I took a lot of music and voice. And then a friend told me if I wanted to be an actor, I should go to school, and I shouldn't limit myself to Wisconsin. So that's when I started to study all these other colleges out there, and mm-hmm. BU is a great, it's a great conservatory, and I went there, and...
They took you.
They took me,
right.
Yeah.
And you had begun to study voice. Does that mean you were singing?
I was, well, yeah, not in shows, but I was singing.
You were studying, too,
voice
right?
lessons, yeah. Voice lessons and dance. I took 2 years of a year of modern dance there.
So you knew that those skills were going to serve you if you wanted to be an actor. That was
Absolutely.
What you were doing, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you like them?
Yeah, I did. It wasn't until I went to BU that I really, really grasped what acting was about. And that's when I truly, truly fell deeply, deeply in love with it.
Do you want to say a little bit about that? About what the shift was for you?
It was the idea of falling into a character and actually being someone else.
Yes.
With what I can do, you know, in the parameters of what I can do. It's fantastic. Just moving in a different way. It was incredibly enlightening because I didn't know that I could do that. And they just sort of like led me through the door, and there I was just exploring that room and went into another room exploring another character, a different person. It's fantastic. And it comes down to one little short sentence, and Bruce Jordan actually says this too. The secret to acting is just thinking the thought. Just think the thought, and that's all you need to do. And it's true.
Think the thought of the character?
Of the character. Think the thought.
Yeah.
You don't need to act. Just think the thought.
Because thought is mother to the action.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right.
And it's so much more subtle and interesting to watch someone think than it is for them to do it. Just because life is subtle. People are subtle.
Well, and it's organic,
complex.
Right?
It's organic.
It's organic. It's not forced, and it's not put on. It's comes out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's
absolutely
lovely. So you learned how to be you.
I did.
Okay, so you do. So now you've got 2 years of the getting in, and then you've got 4 years of BU, right?
Yep.
Okay, so then what?
And then I was sort of the star of BU.
Oh.
So I thought I would go to New York and just take New York by storm. And no, that didn't happen. Of course not, because I'm in college and I'm in this bubble. You know, it was a totally different world. And then I got into the real world, and it's pretty cruel out there, New York. It's cruel. It's a big, big city with a ton of actors. No one wants to know you.
Everybody is trying to be the one.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And it's not malice. There's nothing evil about it. It's just people just don't want to know you. We have enough actors. Thank you anyway. Go be a waiter. Go be a bellman. And so I was a bellman for many years, and trying to and doing shows on the side. Really trying to make it as an actor. It's a real trick. It's a real trap that actors fall into. And that's going to New York or LA, and getting caught in their jobs that it's just supposed to be supplemental income. They really get trapped in those jobs because you work to pay your bills. And you pay your bills and you go to work. You have no time to audition or try to work in your career. So I fell into that trap for about a year until I realized, what am I doing here? I'm not. I didn't come to New York to be a doorman.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, really buckled down, and that's when it started to happen for me.
What does that mean, buckle down?
Buckle down. Spend my time not on the sofa when I have time to rest. Meeting agents, meeting casting directors after doing my 8-hour shift. Spending money to meet them.
Right.
And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. But, it was worth it. Absolutely worth it.
Because
it brought me here.
What was your first job?
My first acting job, it was actually right out of college. About 6 months after college, it was my first professional job. It was Little Women in, what was it? It was a children's theater, Theaterworks USA. It was a children's theater company. But work from that point on to like about 2003 was sporadic, very sporadic. I would quit my job to do an 8-week gig and then come back to another, hopefully my job was waiting
still
for me.
There, right?
If not, I would have to find another job. Very difficult, very sporadic, but it took a while for me to get to a place where I could just solely work as an actor.
Yeah, you say that as though, I don't know how to say this, most actors never get there.
Never get there.
Right.
Most actors don't. 95% of union actors are unemployed.
Yes, right.
Yeah.
So when you say it took a while to get there, I mean, that you got there is extraordinary.
Yeah, and it's also a bit of luck because I met Mr. Bruce Jordan, who is the director of this,
mm-hmm.
and he's also the artistic director and owner of Sheer Madness.
Right.
And Sheer Madness has been going on for 30 years, and I've been doing it off and on for 15 years.
Uh-huh.
So that's a huge, huge part of my employment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. So is this the first time you've worked here?
No, this is my fourth time working here.
Really?
Yeah. I started doing... I did Zootopia here in 2008, I did The Mystery of Irma Bepp and Edward Albee's Occupants.
Wow.
Yeah.
So all straight plays.
Yeah, it's normally just straight plays. You know, this is my first musical, since I was 19.
Oy.
Oh, I was really nervous. It still is a little surreal when I'm on that stage and I'm singing. I'm like, really? I'm going to sing right now? But it's working. I act. I'm a good enough actor where I can act. I can act my way through a song and I can make people believe that I'm a singer.
Yes, I got it. Right.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. So, tell us about Spamalot.
Well.
Did you know the play?
Yes, I knew the play and. I saw it many times on Broadway, and I auditioned for it, and I didn't get it, but I almost got the Las Vegas show of Spamalot. I love Monty Python. I grew up on that movie, the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm.
It's It's basically the movie of the Holy Grail. It's basically a musical of the Holy Grail. And this kind of high comedy is right up my alley. I'm mostly a comedic actor. And this high comedy, slapstick, outrageous silliness is... It's tailor-made for me because I'm a goofball outside the theater. So, and it's just a whole lot of fun. You know? Did I answer your question about what Spamalot is about?
Well, say whatever comes to mind.
It's just outrageously goofy.
Well, then tell us a little bit about the Holy Grail.
Okay. Well, it follows King Arthur and his knights. And, of course, it's not the story at all of King Arthur and his knights. And King Arthur rides an imaginary horse. Oh, God, it's so funny. I can't believe that I get to do this and I get paid for it, prancing around like I'm riding a horse.
Like a kid,
absolutely like a kid. And we meet the strangest characters, a 7-foot tall knight who just wears this outrageous gown, meet an enchanter named Tim. There's a big, huge hand grenade. It's called the Holy Hand Grenade, and there's a killer rabbit. It's just outrageous silliness.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fun. And also, along with the story, it's some great, great songs. And people are right now. They're going to the theater, and they're having an amazing time. They won't walk out of the theater a better person, knowing more, but they will walk out of the theater in a better mood.
So that's what it's about. So you've had a preview?
Yeah, we had a preview, and we had an invited dress, and an invited dress rehearsal, and people are just loving it. They're getting to their feet as soon as the curtain comes down.
Oh, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is wonderful. It's nice to make people feel good.
Yeah. Okay, I only ask one other question.
Sure.
And that is, having given a life, and you really have in one way or another, to this work, is there anything that you would say about that?
About?
What it's like to have given a life to this work?
You know, I guess it goes to what we were just talking about, making people happy. My fiancé works with teens living with cancer. From diagnosis to regression to everything about that. And I always say, wow, you're really fighting a good fight. And here I am telling jokes on stage. And she's like, no, Patrick, you have a really good job, too. You're making people happy. And I like that idea because I don't like to think that I'm just goofing around on stage. I'm really sharing myself with other people. And that's what I'm starting to learn right now in my life and in my 40s, that this can actually help people feel better. And I really enjoy that.
Yeah.
I enjoy that collective, that sharing. This is absolutely what I was meant to do. And the good thing about my career is that I don't have to retire.
No. You know,
I don't have to retire.
Because?
I can still collect a pension, but I don't have to retire.
Because you can work as long as you can.
And I will. I as long as I can. As long as I can get up and move around.
And learn the lines.
And learn the lines, yeah. I'll be doing it.
Yeah, that's great. It's a great place to stop.
Yeah, good.
Thank you very much,
Thank
Patrick.
Thank you very much. It was fun.
This is what I was meant to be, and I will do it as long as I can. And the good news about it is that I can do it for my whole life. This is what it sounds like when you are who you were meant to be, when you are congruent, when what you see is what is there. And it is my hope, as I have said, that as you have listened to Patrick, you have wondered, is there something like that for me? Have I left something significant about myself behind? And the really interesting thing about Patrick's story is that he didn't know it until it was commented on by someone else. Someone, in Patrick's case, the last person in the world one might have expected to have seen that and commented on it and made the connection for Patrick. So, has someone said that to you about something in your life? Was some casual comment by someone about a talent that you seem to have or an interest or a way of being in the world that you dismissed instead of what Patrick did, which was say, wow, maybe that is right. Maybe that is me. Wow, let me look at that. Yeah. that is me. Were you already so brainwashed when someone said that to you that you couldn't see it? You couldn't embrace it? You couldn't let it out? Well, if you're having such a memory now, if you remember somebody saying that you seem to have a talent in writing, or an interest in art, or an interest in history, or an interest in mechanics, or anything, and you want to look back at that and give it a second look, it doesn't matter how long ago that was, or how long it's been, or where you are in your life, it is never too late to be all that you were meant to be. And again, if you want to talk about that, you can go up on my website, thelinshow.com. Don't leave the E out of Lynn, and click on email me and say, I'd like to talk about that. And I will be happy to have that discussion with you. Okay, so as I said, I'm going to play another song from Spamalot, just because they're amazing, and if you don't get to see the play, at least you've gotten to get a giggle out of the music. This song is called I'm Not Yet Dead. Well, actually, he's not yet dead. And on stage, you see this guy trying desperately to give up this corpse, this thing he's behaving as a corpse, and the guy keeps saying, no, I'm not yet dead. Well, anyway, here it is.
Peca vi ignoviunt, Jesus Christus Domine.
Bring out your dead!
Here's one.
I'm not dead.
Here, he says he's not dead.
Yes, he is.
I feel happy. I am not dead yet.
I can dance and I can sing.
I am not dead yet.
I can do the Highland Fling.
I am not dead yet. No need to go to bed. No need to call the doctor, cause I'm not yet dead.
He is not yet dead. That's what the geezer said. No, he's not yet dead. That is off his head. He is not yet dead. Put him back in bed. Keep him on the cot because he's not yet
should not.
I want to be a knight, but I don't like to fight. I'm rather scared I may simply run away.
I'll be right with you, I'll be through and through and through, so stick with me and I'll show you what I do.
We'll remain good chums, who can teach me how to dance.
We're going to enlist, I'm Robin
and I'm Lance.
Coming to, my name will be Sir Fred. I'll be your musician, cause I'm not yet dead.
Gives me such a thrill to sing and dance and keep an eye on lands.
We're going off to war, we'll have girlfriends by the score.
We'll be shot by Michael Moore.
Cause we're not yet dead.
It is so silly, and yet so delightful. It's a really difficult line to walk, to be silly and not so silly that you dismiss it, but that you just enjoy it. And that is what this play is. It is just so much fun. So I'm hoping that you get a chance to see it. And now I'm going to tell you my holiday story, which, as I said, I say every holiday because this actually happened to me during the holidays. I'm on a plane flying from Sarasota, Florida to Atlanta, Georgia. And I'm sitting next to an older man who looks to me like he's in some distress. And I asked him if he was okay, and he said yes, that he was. A little while later, it looked to me like he was sort of falling asleep and jerking awake, and I asked him again if he was okay. And he said that he had taken some medication for his back, and he thought that might be having an impact on him. And although he still didn't look good to me, I didn't want to bother him anymore. I didn't want to embarrass him. So I didn't say anything until the plane was descending. And as the plane descended, I looked over at him, and it looked to me like he had fallen asleep with his eyes open. And I really got concerned. And so even though we were descending, I got out of my seat, and I went down to the stewardess and explained that I thought my seatmate might be having a heart attack or a stroke. She put me in her seat and went back to see what to do about him. We landed. I got up and was exiting the plane when the stewardess came over and said my seatmate wanted to see me. She walked me over to him, and he had an oxygen mask on his face. I couldn't see him. But he took my hand and he squeezed it. It was very emotional for me, actually. But I forgot about it, as, you know, something that happened in the past. Several years went by, and then it was closing in on the holidays, and I met a friend for lunch, someone I don't see that often, and we found this place to meet. And I was returning home, and I passed the Women's Exchange, which is a consignment shop here where I sometimes donate clothing and things. And they have a list of the dates that you can donate. And I thought, oh, hell, let me stop in there and get the list. So I pulled into the parking lot, went in, picked up the list, and then I thought, oh, I'm here. Let me look at the couches. I mean, I wasn't going to buy a couch, but okay, fine. So I went over, and they've got all these couches, right? And I'm standing in front of this big brown couch. A man came over, stood behind me, and said, do you like that couch? And now, I've been to this place a lot of times. None of the staff has ever come over to ask me if I liked something, but, you know, I said, yeah, I like this couch. And he said, well, I don't think this is good for you. Why not? I said. He said, because you see how wide it is, and you're so short. I don't think your feet will reach the ground. He said, see, I'm tall, and it's good for me. And he sat down to show me that. But I don't think it'll work for you. So I took my shoes off and sat down on the couch and tucked my feet under me, which is how I sit. And I said to him, but you see, this is how I sit, so I think it'd be okay. And he said, you know, a couple of years ago, a woman who sat just like you saved my life on a plane. And of course I said, that's because it was me. And I don't know which one of us was more startled or amazed. We continued to tell the story to each other back and over and over and over. And I remember thinking as I was driving home that the holiday season is a season of miracles. And I remember wondering if maybe there really are still miracles. So in this holiday season, I am wishing for you whatever miracles you would want for yourself, and a new year that brings you closer and closer to who you really are. And as always, I am hoping you got something you can use from this show. Something that amused you, tickled you, made you laugh. Something that you didn't know that you know now. Something that you'd forgotten that you now remember. Something that somehow brought you closer to yourself, or at least to the desire to be closer to yourself. Something that'll bring you back. Because I will be here next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
See, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you say. my face and figure I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring, I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go. That I have had my shot, my time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage, let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly, well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper, I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes, every chance I get. I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight, no, no. We will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper, I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper, I may have gotten limper, but I won't go with the wind.